Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are very welcome to the programme. We've got an hour of good sporting chat to come between now and 7 o'clock. It has been a very busy day for a Thursday. We have our new Republic of Ireland men's senior manager. We will hear from him in a couple of moments' time. We'll get some insight as well into the process that has led to the appointment of Heimir Hallgrímsson as the new Irish manager. Eileen Gleeson has been on matchday duty as well today. The Republic of Ireland women's national team in European qualifying action away to England tomorrow evening. She's been chatting to Tony O'Donoghue on what, to be very honest, has been a very eventful week for women's soccer on this island. We'll hear from her shortly. Likewise, Andy Farrell, he has dealt his hand in advance of the second test against South Africa on Saturday. He's been chatting in South Africa today. We've got Camogie, our eye on America, and we will be live to Tulka Park as well in advance of Shelburne's return to European action. All of that to come between now and 7 o'clock. If you'd like to make contact, if you'd like to help steer the conversation, you can text us. Our number is 51552, or you'll find us across social media at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
And it is nice to have your company. It is just getting into the second half in the opening game in the Europa Conference League involving League of Ireland sides. Derry City away to Bruno's Magpies in Gibraltar. That game is scoreless at half time. 7:45 kickoff at Tulka Park, where Shells play host to another Gibraltar side, St. Joseph's. We'll update you on the team news from that game before the end of the programme. It's been a busy day in sport. A lot of press conferences, a lot of people on media duty. We will hear from some of them presently, but I suppose the big headline today, Heimir Hallgrímsson unveiled as the new Republic of Ireland men's senior manager until the conclusion of the 2026 World Cup campaign. We learned today that his salary is probably an increase of around €100,000 on that earned by Stephen Kenny. We will hear from the new manager. We will hear from the FAI's director of football, Mark Canham, and the interim chief executive, David Carell, in a couple of moments' time. Four changes for Ireland ahead of Saturday's second test with South Africa. Gary Ringrose, Ronan Kelleher and Conor Murray come into the starting lineup, replacing the injured Bundy Aki, Dan Sheehan and Craig Casey. One selection choice sees Peter O'Mahony, who captained the side last weekend, dropped to the bench. James Ryan returns to the starting 15. Action well underway in golf's Scottish Open. This is an opportunity for many to hone their preparations for the Open Championship at Royal Troon next week. Rory McIlroy, 5-under par round of 65 today, three shots behind Justin Thomas, who leads. Seamus Power, Tom McKibben, both 1-under par after their opening rounds. Patrick Harrington is back on level par there. So we will keep a keen eye on that and much of the rest of the sport over the course of the next hour. But we will begin with soccer. And as mentioned, a significant day of, I suppose, media appearances by Republic of Ireland soccer managers present and future, Heimir Hallgrímsson. We will hear from him now. He was unveiled at the Aviva Stadium as the new Irish head coach, recently departed his role with Jamaica. Former Iceland manager is the man who has been charged with succeeding Stephen Kenny as the Republic of Ireland manager. We'll hear from him shortly. We're also going to hear in just a moment from the FAI's director of football, Mark Canham. But first up on media duty today at the Aviva Stadium was the FAI acting chief executive David Carell.
This is a significant day for Irish football and indeed for Irish sport. While I'm very pleased to make this announcement, I do want to acknowledge that it is coming during a difficult week in which the association has been dealing with very serious allegations relating to historical abuse of women in Irish football. Please know our preference would have been to make this announcement at a different time, but due to a range of factors, we had to proceed today. We communicated this to the group of women in advance, and we have asked for their understanding. I wish to stress that we do not want to diminish or try to move on from what is a matter of the utmost seriousness. Despite today being an important day for Irish football, those courageous women remain at the forefront of our thoughts. And we reiterate our support for them and commit to ensuring it remains the top priority for the association. I also want to thank the media for your understanding, and I appreciate the timing of today's press conference may have presented a challenge for some covering our vital game for the women's national team tomorrow evening against England, and those of you that have been covering the Euros in Germany. Now, regarding the appointment. I'm going to pass now to Mark, who's going to offer some further background and detail on the appointment. And after that, Mark and Hamir will be available to take any further questions.
Regarding the process itself, there are three important points I'd like to make at this point, and I would like to cover. One, we ran a very thorough process in which we identified Hamir as our outstanding and number one candidate. Two, it was hugely important to us that we ran a confidential process. This was important, firstly, to respect the candidates we spoke to, and those who, and secondly, is how an association and a professional organisation should run its business. As such, I will not be commenting on any other candidates who have been in the process. The third point is around the timeline. As part of the process which we commenced at the back end of last year, we identified Hamir as a candidate and had an initial conversation with him in a very informal way, in which we did the same with other candidates at that point. In March, our selection panel decided that Hamir was our number one candidate, and he was the person we wanted for the role. We wanted to appoint Hamir, but he has been very consistent and very committed to the Jamaica national team, competing in the CONCACAF Nations League and also the Copa America. This was a decision that we absolutely respected. We remained in contact with Hamir and were willing to wait for him to become available. For us, for Irish football, for the selection panel and all of our key focus, it was always about getting the right person. It was always about getting the right person. And that was fundamental to the whole process, the whole time. Whilst we were looking at the short term, we were also looking at the long term. And we were absolutely focused to make sure that we got this appointment right and the right person for our senior men's team and for Irish football. And that is exactly why we made the decision to wait and secure Hamir at this point. As you would expect, and in order to protect the association, we remained in contact with other candidates. We were open, transparent conversations with Hamir. However, it's important to mention that Hamir was the only candidate we ever made a contract offer to. Hamir became available post-America, having resigned from the previous role. This enabled us to have formal contractual conversations and execute contract talks in the last 9 to 10 days. Final point. It is true this took time. We were always in control of the process. Always. We wanted to appoint someone who was the best person for the job, Irish football and our senior men's team. That is not something at any point we were willing to compromise on. We were never willing to compromise on that. And despite lots of external pressure and pressure on making an appointment, we stayed true to what we believed was right, and that was to find the best person for the job. And we were happy to wait for our number one candidate and delighted that he sat here next to us today. And we wish him good luck. I also want to thank and pay tribute to John O'Shea, who we have huge respect for, both as a player and also as a coach. He and his staff have guided the team through recent international friendlies in the last two windows. They prepared the team impeccably, created a brilliant environment for the players, and achieved positive performances and results on the pitch. Finally, from me, we are thrilled to welcome Hamir and excited to what he'll bring to our senior men's team and indeed the association and Irish football as a whole. As well as being an important day for Irish football, it is also a significant and proud day for Hamir himself, his wife who is here today, and also his family. Today is Hamir's first day, and in the next week and coming weeks, he'll be learning more about the players and the team, starting preparations for our important matches in the autumn, starting in September, taking in League of Ireland matches, meeting people at grassroots, amongst several other aspects, and I know he's excited to get going. So I know you're all keen to hear from him, so Hamir and I are happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Hamir, obviously congratulations on the appointment. Just tell us how it came about after the initial contact from the FAI.
Well, it was from them and from some others, it was some interest. So, no, I said from beginning I was committed to Jamaica, finishing the Copa America, etc. But it was always an interested project, this national team, and I think this job is really an interesting project. exciting for all coaches, I think. And so when it got closer to Copa, I was more leaning on this, even though I had some other offers as well. So before Copa America, I talked to the president of Jamaica, told him I would resign after Copa. And I tried to depart Jamaica in as much positive way as possible. And I think we succeeded in that, and thanks to them to do it on a professional note. But yeah, it was always kind of exciting and on top of my list to come here. I don't know when it was, you know, what date it was when I was kind of clear in my head to take this, but, you know, I just always admired the professionalism from the board, the respect they showed me in the process. I know it was probably difficult for them when I repeated myself again and again, and I was focused on finishing the Copa America and probably not the day that they wanted to hear, but they were really professional and honest all the time.
You mentioned yesterday about going back to basics. Can you just expand on that?
Football in general, you need basics, especially at this level, at international level. It's tricky to be a national team coach. It's totally different from being a club coach and a national team coach. Your time with the players is so limited. So you need to have the basics perfect before you build on something different. If you forget the basics, being organized, being compact, being a strong unit, that's always the first thing you need as a national team coach. And then you can build on progressively from that thing. So that was kind of what I meant, not starting with the fancy stuff and forgetting the basics.
That's Hamir Hargrimsson chatting to our colleague Dave Kelly and other members of the media at the Aviva Stadium. Today, a couple of other things which emerged over the course of his media duties across the day. He is going to be based in Ireland. He said that despite it only being a two-hour flight from Iceland, he does want to move here with his wife to get to know the culture, to get to know the people, to get a sense of the football culture that exists. He spoke in an interview, a separate interview with Dave, about the need to try and encourage young players to play in the League of Ireland and to try and strengthen the domestic game here in order to increase the pool of talent that's available. A lot of coverage, and understandably so, in advance of today's press conference around comments made about Mason Greenwood back in January of 2022. As people will remember, Greenwood was suspended by Manchester United over allegations relating to a young woman after images and videos were posted online. In March, when asked about the possibility of Greenwood declaring for Jamaica, his father was born in the country, Hargrimsson said, "I think what he has gone through in a year and a half since it happened is worse than I can imagine. Being in the press and on social media, I can only imagine what he has been going through. The case went through stages and that case was dropped. So it's not up to me or anyone else to judge him." He was asked about those comments today and he responded by saying that those comments were in the context of the question that was asked and the scenario that the question was asked in. And he said he obviously and absolutely did not approve of Mason Greenwood's actions and went to lengths to make that clear. He says he was asked about Greenwood after the president of the Jamaican Footballer Federation and their general secretary, so obviously he as head coach was asked that question, and he said the political answer was obviously all coaches would like to have the best players available, and his intention was to answer in that way. He was asked about his backroom staff and made very strong suggestions that he has heard very impressive things about those who were in situ. Said he had spoken to Seamus Coleman, who had praised the backroom staff a lot, had spoken with John O'Shea. Certainly the indication from Mark Cannon was that John O'Shea is interested in remaining involved, so he with Glenn Whelan and Paddy McCarthy may well still be involved. Touched on it there, had long been the FAI's number one target, and also suggested that the style of tactics we can expect Ireland to, quote, go back to basics. So it'll be about being organised, being compact, being a very strong unit. So we will wait and see what happens. And obviously he rolls around and his opening game is against England at the Aviva Stadium in September. And today he suggested that he expects that when England come to town, they will do so as the new European champions. That final against Spain live on RT2 television on Sunday. evening. So, the Republic of Ireland women's team have a very, very big game tomorrow evening. They face England at Carrow Road in Norwich in their latest Euro 2025 qualifier. Obviously, Ireland still looking for their first result of note in that group. And the build-up to this game, you can understand, has been overshadowed somewhat by the joint RTE and Sunday Independent investigation into alleged unwanted or inappropriate sexual advances from coaches back in the 1990s. Now, the squad didn't do media over the course of the week, but head coach Eileen Gleeson was on media duty today in advance of the game tomorrow, which you can enjoy here on an extended game on 2FM. It's live as well on RTE2 television and on the RTE player. And Eileen has been chatting today with our correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue.
Eileen, it's been a difficult week, I'd say you'd agree, for football. And for your team in particular, is it something that you've discussed as a group?
Yes. I mean, yes is the straight answer to that question. But I think in terms of it being a difficult week for football, it's a difficult week for women and girls as well in football. And, you know, for me personally, it was awful to watch and to listen to the girls recount their experience. So, like, for me, from the girls, I mean, we offer like full support and fully support the investigation and solidarity to the women for coming forward and sharing their experiences. And yeah, of course, we discussed it with the team. It was very important, I think, to do that. We, you know, gave them the information that the programme was coming, and then course the girls would have watched the programme, and then we discussed it the next day, and CEO and of course Aoife Rafferty came in and discussed openly, you know, the safeguarding and support lines and anonymous ways to report if you needed to, so having that transparency. But really important on a personal level, you know, people are deeply affected by this stuff, and rightly so, and it's important that this can trigger other emotions within the players. And of course we're in a camp at the same time, so I was trying to manage that while acknowledge that and make sure that everybody feels supported. So that was really important.
You've been around the game for such a long time. I mean, were you aware of any of this sort of stuff going on?
Yeah, I was a young coach at the time. I wasn't involved in either of those environments. But, you know, for me to speculate on hearsay, we know it's a criminal investigation. And yeah, so it's not me adding comments. I don't want to compromise anything around the women. Yeah, you know, it's so important, and it's absolutely critical that football is a safe environment. You know, across society we're talking about a micro environment in football, but across all sport, and it needs to be safe for everybody. And you know, women we're talking about now, and it's very upsetting. It's very upsetting.
And the fact that the men's manager was announced yesterday, the day before you, or 2 days before you play an important game, day of a European Championship semi-final as well. Was that a bit unusual timing, do you think?
Who knows timing? I mean, we've had to deal with the documentary dropping on the day that we come into camp, and it's super important that those players' messages are heard and the women, and as we said, we support it. But the timing offers another challenge for us in coming into camp and then the men. So what we have to do is close off the noise, because we can get, you know, lose focus if we listen to all the noise. So we've tried to keep it remaining focused solely on the games then coming.
Because England is giddy with excitement. The fact that their men have made the final now, the women are the current European champions.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that noise in this country at the moment.
Of course, and rightly so. They should be super excited. But we're here, you know, to try to get ourselves a seeded place. Always to focus on Euro 2025, so we have to keep focused on air business.
And to do that without your captain, Katie McCabe, and a number of injured players, that's a difficult challenge for you.
It is. But we've known Katie's gone since that yellow card was produced, so it's not anything new at this point. Fortunately, we had the late injury of Kira, who's a real loss, and you know, a couple of other players. But we've also got Denise back, so we've got Fatty back as well. So we have to focus on who we have and who we don't have at this point, and, you know, use the squad to its maximum.
That's Eileen Gleeson chatting to Tony O'Donoghue earlier. A reminder, if you've been affected by any of the issues raised in that joint RTE Sunday independent investigation last weekend, rte.ie/helplines is a resource which is available for support services. A reminder, that match live on RTE2 television tomorrow evening, live on the RTE player and live here as part of an extended Game on 2FM. That game, I suppose a long old build-up for the lads here tomorrow night, 7:45 kick-off. So we will be keeping a keen ear on that with interest. Big challenge for Ireland over the course of the couple of weeks, this week and next. But what a massive occasion there is going to be in Cork next Tuesday as the women's team play France at Super Value Park Equi. We have a quick break to take. And after that, we will be to South Africa to hear from the Ireland head coach, Andy Farrell.
RTE
2FM.
Game on.
Rugby.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. So after Ireland's 27-20 defeat to the world champion South Africa last Saturday morning, the sides will meet for the second test this coming Saturday in Durban. Bundy Aki joins joins Ronan Kelleher. I was right the first time round. I will revert. Bundy Aki joins Dan Sheehan and Craig Casey in being ruled out through injury. Sheehan with a knee injury, Craig Casey with concussion. Bundy has been carrying a shoulder injury over the course of the week. So it means that Gary Ringrose, Ronan Kelleher and Conor Murray come in as replacements for those. The one big tactical call or surprising selection is Peter O'Mahony, the Irish captain who led the side last week, drops to the bench. Caelan Dorris will now captain Ireland. James Ryan will play in the second row. Tadhg Byrne moves into the back row. There will be coverage of the game as part of Saturday Sport here on Radio 1 on Saturday afternoon, and the Irish head coach Andy Farrell has been chatting to reporters in Durban today.
To start with, I want to ask about Bundy Aki. We kind of heard he picked up a knock last Saturday. Was it injury related, and if so, how close was he to making it this week?
Yeah, it is injury related. He's a bang on his shoulder that he was brave enough to go through the last 20 minutes of the game. That's what he does for his team. You know, he'll fight when he has to. But unfortunately, really at the beginning of the week, a little bit shut down, etc. And would have been a risk. But also with the quality of backup centres that we've got, we have to do the right thing by the team, and Bundy understands that.
One of the other changes then, Tadhg Byrne in the back row, James Ryan into the second row. On Tadhg in the back row, it's something you've tried previously, the first game of the Rugby World Cup. What are you hoping to see from it? What is the thinking behind it for this weekend's game?
Well, I mean, you can talk about Tadhg or Pete going to the bench, but what people are failing at this moment in time to talk about is James Ryan has been a starter for us for years and years, and been a real leader within our side, and he's not happy sitting on the bench neither, and we've seen some real guts and fight and determination to want to get his starting place back. So I thought he had a great impact off the bench last week, and how he's trained throughout this tour so far shows that he's hungry. So we're hoping to get something from him, and also we know that Tadhg Byrne's a world class player no matter what position he plays in.
And then also Caelan Dorris as captain this week. It's something that's going to come up during the week around his communication with Luke Pearce last week, and there's obviously been kind of, he's spoken about it as well this season, about how it's been a work in progress for him stepping up to captaincy and dealing with that. Are you fully confident in his ability to work with the referees and the officials on the day?
I'm more than fully confident. I thought he was excellent at the weekend. I think first and foremost he leads from the front. I mean, he's in outstanding form. His performance last week, never mind the leadership or the captaincy bit, he was outstanding. So that's, you know, be the best version of yourself. That's the best form of leadership. But also he's a calming influence. He's bright. The questions that he's going to the referees with are the right ones. His manner is very good as well. I'm sure as Caelan goes through his leadership roles, and hopefully there'll be many more as far as captaincy is concerned. albeit he is still in that infancy, isn't he, as far as trying to get some more experience there, hence why he's got this opportunity. But he'll continue to earn respect from himself as a captain, as a leader, but more so in the eyes of the referees as well.
And you probably came off, I think, with a head injury.
Yeah.
What was the timeline of him being available for this game? Did he fail HIA?
No, he didn't. His HIA, his concussion not confirmed. So he went through the protocols 2 and 3, flying colours, no concussion confirmed. So he's not missed any training this week. It's the pings on the gun shield. Yeah, and therefore the ruling at this moment in time, the pings on the gun shield, if it's before half time, you have to get a HIA at half time. And as we know, it's a tough old process to go through.
What was, if you had a conversation with Peter, what was that like? Obviously, you're captain again for this campaign. What was the chat like?
Very easy, because of how he is as a person. And you don't expect those conversations to be easy, but and don't get me wrong now, he's not accepting and he's not happy, obviously, but he does the right thing for the team. And that's at the forefront of his mind constantly. And that's proper leadership. He understands that we want to have a look in this direction to see how it goes. He's the captain of this tour. I suppose it shows the mark of the man, how you lead after a little bit of disappointment, of how you carry on being yourself or not. And he's on the bench for a reason. It makes people feel good. It's right when he's there, his presence and leading, and that has been so evident over the last couple of days. So he couldn't have done a better job in that regard.
That's Andy Farrell chatting to Neil Tracy and other members of the media in Durban today. And if you want to get a preview of that match, Bernard Jackman will be amongst the guests on that extended game on here tomorrow evening. We have a massive weekend, All-Ireland Senior Football semi-finals to come in the world of men's Gaelic football. And we had two pretty eventful Camogie quarter-finals which took place at Croke Park last weekend. And we'll chat about those and more with Aoife Murray after the break.
2FM.
Game on.
Camogie.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. So the final four for this year's All-Ireland Senior Camogie Championship is known, the Glen Dimplex Camogie Championship. Tipperary will face Galway, Cork will face Dublin, both semi-finals at Nolan Park on the 27th of July after victories for Dublin over Kilkenny and Galway over Waterford at Croke Park last weekend. Aoife Murray is with us as always. Aoife, how are you?
Really good, thank you.
Good. Is it fair to suggest, or am I being standard Dublin centric media to say Dublin's win over Kilkenny at the weekend is arguably the result of the championship so far?
I'd absolutely forgive you for being Dublin centric, because I think it was, in fairness, you know, like ignoring the Cork hurlers and what they did on Sunday, but I think when you look across all the Camogie Championship, having Waterford step up last year, I think, was maybe a big mindset shift for maybe the non-top three. We always could talk about that top three, which has completely taken a shift over the past 2 years, which I think is only positive for the game. But for me, even just tactically, how Dublin went about the game, it was quite a mature response to being in a semi-final against the likes of a Kilkenny. So for me, certainly, it was definitely one of the results of the weekend.
And there's a couple of different ways that we can look back on it. Dublin went like for a vast spell of the second half without scoring. Kilkenny will probably reflect on a game that they had enough opportunities to come back and win. And Dublin will probably look at a situation where they've now made the final four and will reflect on that tape and question how they left so many scores behind them.
Yeah, but I suppose, you know, you'd often look when you had the likes of, say, a Dublin versus Kilkenny, you'd always nearly go to how did Kilkenny leave the game behind them, you know? But in fairness, I think a lot of credit has to go to Dublin and how they set up to frustrate Kilkenny. You know, they set really deep, Maher just sitting back and at one stage, I think there was nearly more tennis going on in Croke Park than there was over in Wimbledon with the defensive setups of both. I think you could even look at Dublin to say they were probably a little bit more economical when they had their opportunities. I think their bench had a real positive positive influence in the game the last 10 minutes. And I think maybe that's slightly different, where Kilkenny had the chances, but it just didn't seem to have maybe that quality at the end. I think they were still quite relying on the likes of Grace Walsh, Prendergast very much in the first half, but again, they couldn't get into the game in the second half. And I think more so credit has to be given to Dublin for constantly frustrating them. And even in that period of the game where they went scoreless for, it was about 15 or 20 minutes, they still never let Kilkenny get away from them. And I think that was probably one of the most impressive things for me, was they hung in there. They didn't let them out of sight. And when they had their opportunities, they took them.
The psychology of it now, like they will go to Nolan Park to face Cork without any great sense of expectation on them, that, you know, the pressure is really off. And there was a kind of a sense of this from Bill McCormick, to speak to him after the game, that they had their end of year dinner planned for last Saturday because it was either they'd have something to celebrate or they'd have the year to reflect upon. That there's probably now remarkable freedom going into those semi-finals.
Listen, 100%. And, you know, you go into a semi-final against Cork, a team that, you know, I can't put it any better way, but hammered them in the championship. I think kept them scoreless from play. So they're going in kind of very much freely. And the whole semi-final will be about Cork. And, you know, even the All-Ireland final will be about Cork. And they haven't even won the semi-final. So for Dublin, like, it must be quite freeing for them to go in there. But just looking at even how the co-manager spoke before, during and after the game, how even Aisling Maher went about her business afterwards with her interviews, which you probably would have been on top of the world. But I just thought there was actually quite a strong maturity about how Dublin just went about their business, both management and panel. So they'll be going in very much under the radar, very relaxed, but equally I'm very interested to see how they actually set up to stop the kind of free scoring Cork.
What are the main things then to take away from the second quarter final? Galway's 3-point win over Waterford.
It's a bit of a what could have been for Waterford.
I think two years running.
Yeah, and I think in fairness, you know, they might look back at this and go, they got to the final last year and they didn't get through the quarters this year, that it might seem like that, you know, it's a bit more of a failure than a success. But I actually have to say that, you know, Waterford had chances at the weekend. If they had a couple of those injuries, they didn't have a couple of those injuries, you would have to say they would have had Galway. They would have at least put them down right to the wire. I think not having Mairead O'Brien, which in fairness, like for me, she was definitely one of the players of the championship. And I've often said about Waterford is they have three players that you would go get on, I think, any inter-county team. And then there was a little bit of a drop off with regard to players to be able to step up into that real strong senior grade. But in fairness to Mairead O'Brien, she really stepped in there and took a huge amount of pressure, I think, scoring-wise, off of the likes of Rocket, off of Carton and Bray. And seeing her miss out, being not able to start that game at the weekend, I think that was a huge loss for them. A bit like the final last year, when Vicky Faulkner went off at the start of that game, they didn't have the bench to come in. So I would have to say, you know, a few of those hard luck stories, they would have really pushed Galway. And I think that's maybe a pointer to, one, the maturity of Galway, or Waterford, apologies, how well I think they were organised, how their tactics were set up, having the likes of Brianna O'Regan to come up and bang a ball over 70 yards over the bar. I think maybe it's a reflection on how far Waterford had actually come. I wouldn't want them to, any players to step away. I certainly think there's way more in that Waterford team. There's definitely a national title in that team. And if they can bring one or two players through, they'll certainly have a really strong 2025.
When we look at the structure of the championship, and there's so much focus on the split season versus the compressed season and everything else, but you look at these quarterfinals, the 6th and 7th of July, the semi-finals on the 27th of July, the final on the 11th of August. Like, I'm thinking Tipperary and Cork haven't played until since the last weekend in June. And, you know, would you much rather have the momentum of the quarterfinals and build in, or how difficult is it for the likes of a Tipperary and Cork to maintain the performance level when you're effectively playing challenge matches or playing in-house matches? It feels to me like such a big break. Maybe I'm looking at it wrong from the outside.
I think if you're Tipperary and you're Cork and you watched the games last weekend, you'd be damn happy to be straight into the semi-final because you look at it and all of a sudden Kilkenny, one of the top three, one of the most successful teams over the past, 12 or so years, not getting through a quarter-final. Then you have Galway, who were pushed to the pin of their collars by Waterford. So to me, if you were Cork and Tipperary, yes, you would like a lot more competitiveness maybe and freshness going in to the semi-final. But you wouldn't want to scare, you wouldn't want to get yourself off the track you're on. I think both teams are more than happy that they did not have to have a battle in the quarterfinal. And even if you were reading or hearing what Tipperary had been saying over the championship, they wanted to get straight through to a semi-final. They did not want to have either a hiccup in the quarters, being overly tested, losing players in the quarter. I think both teams are more than happy to go straight through to the semi-final.
Would you fancy them to contest the final?
I would. I have to say, I think we're talking about this a few weeks ago.
I was trying to use my Tipperary heritage to stir up your core confidence, you know?
Oh, listen, I think there'll be so many past players that would certainly have FOMO on that final day. I think both, certainly, the way they've gone about their business in the championship, I think both teams are absolutely strong enough to be the last two in the championship. I think it would be a really hard fought game. As I always said, no matter what level Tipperary are at, anytime they came out to play Cork, they always raised it.
Yes.
Just always raised it. So I certainly think they could be the last two standing.
We talk so much about exposure for games and focus for games. And, you know, the work that the four teams last weekend put in is up there with the work that any teams in the country put in. The scheduling of the games at Croke Park, like I walked down the sideline at halftime in the Kilkenny-Dublin game and I'm thinking to myself, this must be so disheartening for a group of players to come back out and see what felt to me like a crowd of hundreds rather than crowds of thousands. And I think Pádraig Lodge drew attention on the radio on Saturday afternoon to the big gap that existed between the end of the Camogie quarter-final and the start of the hurling semi-final. And obviously you need to allow for extra time and you need to allow for stoppages in play. But like, it just didn't feel right to me to have those matches in Croke Park with such a small crowd when the semi-finals will be a doubleheader in Nolan Park where you would presume there's going to be a rip-roaring atmosphere.
Yeah, look, I completely agree. I just don't think that it was the right venue. And I'm sure plenty of those players, you know, they want to have a chance to play in Croke Park. And I could understand if those teams were like, no, we want to play those games in Croke Park, right? But you have to put your other hat on and go, what's best for the game? How best can we actually showcase this game? But to an empty Croke Park, I just don't see the correlation between the promotion and having the games in an empty Croke Park. For me, I think you should be bringing those games to a lot smaller venue. You know, Nolan Park's a cracking venue. Like the atmosphere, if you can get 10,000 plus people into Nolan Park, like the atmosphere is cracking. You know, they're nearly on the field with you. And I think any player will tell you, past or present, when you can feel the crowd, like it does do something to you. Like it brings so much emotion into your play and it gives you that extra bit of energy. For me, seeing an empty Croke Park last weekend, it wouldn't entice you to go to the next quarterfinal.
Particularly when you have a situation. And I'm open to correction and I'm happy for clarification, but I'm presuming the semi-finals are in Nolan Park because they don't want the pitch in Croke Park to be used on the day before the football final. So like you could have a situation where Tipperary or Cork could exit the championship at the semi-final stage and not have had their championship day out in Croke Park.
Yeah, but I still think Nolan Park is still the right.
In terms of the desire that players have to play at what is the great bastion of Gaelic games, that it just is odd that the two arguably the best teams in the country, one of them could depart without having had that experience this year. So there's a contradiction in there somewhere.
Look, there is, but it's like anything in progression. There always has to. Not everybody can win sometimes in progression. And I think it's like, how do we make the game successful in 2024 so that next year in 25 you should have 10,000+ at a quarter final? Yeah. You know, not in a stadium where you can hear the seagulls. You know, and I think that is the issue. It's the promotion and the marketing. And I hate to bring it always back to like a business sense here, but like, if Camogie was a business last weekend, you'd have everybody around the boardroom table, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, you're going, all right, we are not selling this product at all, you know? And for me, it is how could you brought those into a double header where you would be getting 10,000 plus people? Like, forget about the actual financial reward of having a full house, right? Just ignore about the money side of it. Just the selling of that game, young boys, young girls at home seeing a packed stadium, whatever size it is, but a packed stadium in a, one of the most competitive games of the season, like that would entice you. Whether you've any ties to Dublin, Galway, Waterford and Kilkenny, it would entice you to go, oh, I might actually look at that next year and see where that's on.
Yeah,
and empty Croke Park, you wouldn't.
Yeah, and I don't mean to take away from what were two great contests. And like, listen, it was, and again, I'm not trying to be Dublin-centric and it's not my intention to be Dublin-centric, but to stand in the top of the stairs on the Cusack Stand side and to see that group of players come in having recorded this victory was, mm-hmm. listen, it was up there with what you saw from Limerick when they ended the wait for an All-Ireland and Dublin when they did their six in a row in football and everything else. So listen, it's the game that are important and there's other elements around it that obviously could get some improvement. Aoife, it's a great pleasure to chat to you as always. Thanks so much and look forward to the rest of the games. Thanks for being with us.
Cheers, thank you.
Aoife Murray with us there. Much more camogie coverage to come between now and the culmination of that championship in a couple of weeks' time. Bad news for Derry City. They're heading to the closing stages of their game in Gibraltar. They now trail Bruno's Magpies by 2-0. Those two goals, the first coming in the 49th minute, the second coming in the 82nd minute. They're in the 88th minute at the minute. So Derry will be looking for something in order to bring that game back to the Brandywell in a week's time. Let's check in a return of European football to Talca Park and a return of Shelburne to European football. They're in action at 7:45 against another Gibraltar opponent, St Joseph's, and with details of the team news from Talca Park. Good evening to Oisin Coyne.
Thanks indeed, Damien. Well, as you said, 18 years after their last European campaign, Shelburne are back where they want to be. They welcome St Joseph's of Gibraltar to what is a sunny Talca Park at the moment in their UEFA Conference League first qualifying round first leg, looking to take that league form, an impressive league form, 3 points clear at the top with 12 games to go into this continental competition. As you say, the teams are in. Damien Duff makes one change from Shelves 1-1 draw with Drogheda last week. Conor Kearns keeps his spot in goals and it's a flat back four of Sean Gannon, Patrick Barrett, Cameron Ledwidge and Tyreek Wilson. The trio in midfield consists of captain Mark Coyle, Jonathan Nunney, and that sole change is Liam Burt, who is in for Evan Caffrey. And then leading the lines is a pacey front three starring Matthew Smith, John Martin and the 21-year-old Will Jarvis, who's looking to add to his 8 goals so far this season. Reminder, this is Joseph's first game since May, having finished second in their domestic league last season, 1 point ahead of FC Bruno's Magpies, as you mentioned there in action this evening. One of their star players is defender Jace Oliveiro, who has 58 caps for Gibraltar. He started both Euro 2024 qualifiers against Ireland last year and he looks to be taking up a more advanced role this evening, starting on the left of what is a midfield three. One player who may prove troublesome for the Shell's defence is the Spaniard Pablo Rodriguez, who scored 16 goals in Gibraltar last year and starts as a sole striker tonight. And this is Joseph's second meeting with an Irish club, having knocked out Larne at this stage 2 years ago. And Damien Duff shared his thoughts a few days ago and saying it was difficult to get footage of tonight's opponents, and well, hopefully they have prepared well and we get a good game here this evening. I suppose some context on the game though, one thing to note is this, I suppose, the financial draw of tonight's fixture. Even a defeat in this tie for Shells gives them €150,000, bigger than the entire prize of winning the League of Ireland Premier Division of 125. So the financial boost in Europe is huge as it stands, and both sides looking to get themselves up with a strong performance ahead of next Thursday's second leg in Gibraltar. So as it stands, Damien, all eyes on Drumcondra as the stands begin to fill up with a sellout crowd expected here this evening, and hopefully we get a game that matches the occasion. Kick-off at Talca is at 7:45.
And Oisin, just before I let you go, like, we can hear the atmosphere in the background. People who follow League of Ireland football will know there's been obviously the Save Talca Park campaign. There's a lot of people who thought Shelburne at one point was destined to go out of business, so it's a big evening for an awful lot of people. I'd imagine the atmosphere already is hopping and this is the hottest ticket on the north side of Dublin this evening.
Absolutely, you're not wrong. I know you can probably hear the music in the background, and as I said, said, the stands are filling up. I was speaking to a couple of the fans as well, and just even for the younger fans as well, especially just across the country in the League of Ireland, how big it is to have occasions like this, even if you're not a Shell supporter, but especially for the home fans here this evening, seeing this type of football. And imagine we get a good result here, and I know a lot of people scrambling even for tickets for the second leg next week. It's just such a huge occasion and very important for the growth of the league overall.
Brilliant. We'll see how it goes, Oisín. Thanks so much for being with us, Oisín Coyne there at Talca Park in reaction to that game. No doubt on the RT website and on Morning Ireland tomorrow morning. And listen, if you're a regular listener to programmes that I'm involved in, you'd know my allegiance is more Dublin 7 than Dublin 3 when it comes to football. But isn't it a big night for Irish football overall? So we wish Shells and Derry the very best. And likewise, Shamrock Rovers with the second leg of their Champions League game to come next week.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Shep, how are you?
I am great, Damien. How are you doing? Got a packed show tonight, huh?
Listen, it's to keep me out of trouble, and good guests, good content, and just keep the car between the ditches, as we say over here, and just keep motoring on, you know?
I know exactly what you mean. Hey, real quick, have you been paying attention to your Chicago Cubs and their lack of offense for the last 3 months?
I have been speaking to my sources in Chicago, who are particularly worried about the recruitment for the coming season, and are wondering what in the name of all that is sacred is going on with the apparent experts who exist around Wrigley Field, who listen, it's not like a lot of these things that we've touched upon before, where maybe the focus is too much on developing the infrastructure and developing the tourism aspects, and you kind of forget, well, actually, you do need to have a competitive team in order to have people land into Wrigley Field.
No, absolutely. Yeah, they started out great the first 6, maybe 8 weeks of the season, and it's just been all downhill since then. You know, it's been quite frustrating to watch. But, hey, they're in Baltimore, and they've won 2 in a row, and maybe the best team in baseball they're playing. So, you know, as we say over here, that's baseball.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
That's right.
We heard earlier on the program from our newly installed Icelandic-born Republic of Ireland senior men's manager. And listen, I saw today suggestions that Jurgen Klopp, the recently departed Liverpool manager, has turned down the USA, who have a recently available vacancy in charge of their national side.
Yes. So we talked last week on the show about, you know, whether or not the U.S. men's national team would fire Greg Berhalter after the dismal performance in the Copa America tournament. And while it didn't happen last Thursday, which was July 4th, which would have been, you know, a bit rude to do it that day, the decision was made last night by the head of the U.S. Soccer Association. And he said, look, you know, this was my decision. I didn't really search out for a lot of opinions. We had some metrics that we were, you know, aiming at over the last 12 months. We haven't really hit a lot of them. And then you put the performance in the tournament on top of that as well. And it just added up to not be good news for Greg Berhalter. And look, I mean, Jurgen Klopp's name was one of the first ones that was out there. I know that was an unbelievable long shot, you know, to try to get him after the, you know, recently retired from Liverpool. But, you know, why not shoot your shot? You know, I mean, why not see if he is up to really having a challenge? You know, I've heard Pep's name mentioned as well. He's got 1 year left in Man City. So, you know, I don't think that'd be happening anytime soon. But, I mean, yeah, the States are at a crossroads, Damien. We talked about it 2 years ago at the World Cup in Qatar. They advanced out of their group and lost to the Netherlands in the round of 16. Not a terrible showing for the United States, okay? Let's just be honest. I mean, that's usually okay. And then since then, it's just kind of stuck in neutral. And then this poor performance, not a lot of offense in the Copa America. And, you know, it's just something had to be done. And I think it was time. The fans absolutely wanted it. The players were kind of on the fence. But there was just a lot of talk in the fan ranks of him needing to go.
Yeah, but the challenge that you have is that you fast forward, like you've rewound 2 years there. You fast forward 2 years and we will be in the midst of the 2026 FIFA World Cup, of which the United States is one of the three co-hosts. So you would imagine
right.
that USA Soccer wants to have the strongest possible team in place, and it is quite the junction in terms of putting the right man or woman in charge of that side in order to have a competitive team. Because, listen, in any country, the USA will need a strong national side in order for that tournament to really kind of tap into the public consciousness.
Absolutely, and that was some of the points that the pundits were making after the early exit from the Copa America, which was between now and the start of the World Cup in 2 years, there are not a lot of opportunities to play the type of competition that you're going to get with Uruguay, Colombia, Brazil, you know, some of these other, you know, some of these other countries that you're going to have an opportunity to be playing. And, you know, this was just a blown opportunity. You know, the friendlies that'll be played over the next 2 years aren't really going to test you very much. You're not going to get a lot out of those. And so now whoever this new manager is, are they really going to know what they have until they get into, you know, pool play at the World Club. So, you know, you would think 2 years, oh my God, you just have so much that you can do in 2 years. But in this instance, no one seems to think that whoever gets selected to do this is going to have an easy job on their hands.
Yes. I was reading about like viewership figures and stuff for the Copa America and how it really hasn't gained an awful lot of traction. Darwin Nunez is kind of trending on social media today for probably all the wrong reasons based on some of the incidents we saw last night.
Yeah, so last night Uruguay and Colombia were playing in Charlotte, which is in North Carolina on the eastern coast of the United States, for those that may not be aware. And Colombia won 1-0, so they advanced to the finals of the tournament. They're going to play Canada, which is a whole other situation, the fact that Canada's even in the finals. But that's another story for another day. But after the match ended, you know, some fans started to get into, you know, small fights in the stands. Well, it happened to be the section with the Uruguay, you know, friends and family section. And so some of the players actually got into the stands, you know, quite reminiscent, Damien, of the Malice at the Palace about 20 years ago with Ron Artest, you know, jumping into the stands and they're fighting fans down on the field. Thankfully, it was not nearly as bad as that. But, you know, that happens so rarely in American sports, and I don't really think it happens a lot around the world either, that, you know, it's happened in hockey a couple of times, but it's back in the 70s and the 80s. I mean, it doesn't ever really happen anymore. You know, baseball fans try to jump down on the field, they're immediately tackled. If someone's dumb enough to run out of the field in a football game, they're going to get tackled by, you know, somebody wearing football pads. Very rarely does something like this get carried into the stands, and you really hate to see this.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's not one that you can condone. Chef Premier, thanks for being with us as always. Enjoy the week, and we'll chat next Thursday.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Chef with us from his eye on America. Still playing in Gibraltar. Bruno's Magpies still leading Derry City by 2-0. Shells against St. Joseph's to come at 7:45. Rachel May Hannon is on the way after 7 o'clock. Jenny Green is here after 9. A four-hour game on from 6 o'clock tomorrow on this very radio station with Shane Dawson, including coverage of the Republic of Ireland's game away to England. Stephen Higgins was our broadcast coordinator this evening. Ronan Lawler produced. From Damien O'Mara, till we chat again, good night. 2FM.